Steve Dale back with you on WGN, 10 minutes after 2 o'clock. Anything going on in the newsroom, you know Ron Brown will jump in and say, I'm here to talk about it. But right now we are here to talk about this book called Algren, A Life. Mary Wisniewski is in the studio. Mary, welcome to WGN.
Thank you.
You must have been surprised when I contacted you because this is the kind of thing Rick Hogan would do. It's very erudite and very fancy. But Nelson Algren wasn't about being fancy.
No.
And we'll get to him in a second. I think we'll have to explain who he was because I bet a lot of people may not know. But first, who are you? You're a longtime Chicago columnist.
Yes, I was a columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times and at the Chicago Tribune, and I worked as the Midwest reporter for Reuters for a while, and now I'm spokesperson for the Circuit Court of Cook County, the Chief Judge's Office, but I also do arts writing for New City, so those are the things I do.
Just tell them I'm not guilty. So, about Nelson Algren, why did you choose him?
Well, I was an English major. And I was reading all the great works of literature, you know, Shakespeare and Yeats and all that. And but I was also looking to, you know, see what was going on in the wild side. And someone recommended this book to me, Man with a Golden Arm by Nelson Algren, which I'd never seen before. It wasn't in the canon. It wasn't one of the books we were supposed to read. And I started reading it expecting to see, you know, something like, electric Kool-Aid acid test or something. But instead, I found that it was set in Wicker Park, in my family's old neighborhood, and it was about Polish Americans and dealing with problems. And I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't know that we could be in literature.
Why did you choose to write a book about Nelson Algren, though?
Because I love the book. I love the writing. I was astounded.
What was it about the writing that
you loved? Because it's so poetic and it's almost dreamlike. It's very dense and rich, and it makes you see the city that we love so much in a new way. I say in the book that it's like, you know, you see sunflowers all your life, and then you see Vincent van Gogh's sunflowers, and you see sunflowers in a new way. It opens your eyes up to them, and that's what Algren did for me, for the city, and that's what I think he does for this city. He makes us see it in a new way.
Won all sorts of awards for his writing at the time. I mentioned Ernest Hemingway, because he was on the same genre, in a way. That's not the right word, but the same. If there were a group of writers that would get together, it would be he and some other folks. I know Art Shea, the famous photographer, was a great friend of his, and you write in the book then they weren't great friends.
Yeah, Nelson had a way of breaking off friendships rather suddenly. He was also great friends with Studs Terkel, and they ended up being friends throughout their lives, partly because Studs used to loan him money. And but Nelson was pretty good about paying it back. Nelson used to have a bit of a money problem because he was a gambler. He played poker all the time, and he wasn't very good at it.
So let's talk about the way this guy was brought up. I mean, he would jump on rail cars to get from place to place.
Right. Well, that's because of when he graduated from college. He went to University of Illinois at Champaign, was journalism major, and he graduated in 1931. Which was probably the worst time to graduate as a journalism major, except now, because it wasn't, you know.
I get that.
Because it was in the middle of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And he tried to, there were 8 newspapers in Chicago at the time. And,
8?
Yes, and there was Sydney News Bureau, and there were newspapers all over the place, and he could not get a job. And he wandered from place to place. He tried up in Minnesota. He tried Southern Illinois. And then he just did what a lot of people did back then. He went south to where it was warm to try to get jobs. And that's how he started meeting the people that became the characters in his books.
But he also got arrested along the way?
He did get arrested. He was working on his first novel, and he was borrowing a typewriter in a college in Texas.
Borrowing?
Well, he was allowed to do it. He came in, and he was, you know, be friendly and using the typewriter. But when it was time to go back to Chicago, he really liked this typewriter.
That's what I'm saying.
And he decided to pack it into a packing box and ship it to his parents, and not realizing that about, as he put it, 37 people saw him walking down the street of this small Texas town with the typewriter. And so he was brought to jail for stealing a typewriter. And because it was a rural part of Texas, he had to wait a month for a circuit judge to come around and hear his case. He ended up being released. He just couldn't go back to that part of Texas for a while. But it really gave him a vision of what it would be like. It's like to be in prison. He had a terrible experience, and that prison keeps repeating in all of his books. All of his characters end up in a prison like the one he was in Texas.
What I want to find out is how he landed in Chicago, how he then, until the end of his life, stayed pretty much in Chicago, wrote about Chicago. And also, if you could recommend one book that he wrote that we should find, if you've not read his works before, what would that be? And we'll find out. Mary Wisniewski is here. He wrote this book called Algren, A Life. And boy, oh boy, what a life it was. And we're only going to touch on some highlights because how many pages are in this book? Like 400 and somethings and near that?
So
300 and something.
It reads like a novel, though. You just get right through it.
Well, it's still 300 and something pages. Yeah, yeah. We're not going to hit on everything. But I do want to know how he made it from then Texas ultimately to Chicago.
Well, he was born in Detroit, but he came to Chicago when he was four, and so that's where he grew up. And after he was wandering around, he decided to come back on a freight train back to where his parents lived. His parents had a two flat in Albany Park on North Troy Street. And he started writing about his, you know, he was writing about his adventures on the road. And he moved to the Westtown area, and he was mostly writing about the Polish American neighborhood and about the residents there. And he got in trouble there because he was writing about Polish American immigrants who were drug addicts and who were prostitutes and who were killers, and the Polish American gentry did not care for that, and they tried to have his books banned from the Chicago Public Library, and they reported him to the FBI. And so he had some trouble here. You know, people don't like to be told that they're, as Mike Royko, who was a friend of his, said, you know, they would prefer that he would have written about a dentist who changed his name and moved to the suburbs, you know.
Exactly. But he infiltrated, I think that's the right word, himself with a certain, later when he moved to New York, you wrote that he hung out with prostitutes. And I guess he did that here in Chicago, too.
He hung out with people. He was most interested not just with the lower class, but with the people who'd really fallen off the ladder altogether.
Why? Why was that his interest?
He was fascinated by the poor. He was fascinated by the people who couldn't make it. And he was almost like Jesus, and he couldn't take his eyes off them. This is something that Kurt Vonnegut said about them. And he wanted to focus on who were not making it in society and why. Because he had come, his vision was formed by the Great Depression, and he got to see how thin the crust of civilization is when you suddenly become poor. And he got to see, you know, terrible things, you know, during the Depression, people losing their whole livelihoods for no fault of their own. And so his heart kind of remained in that era, and that's who he focused on. And when he was served in the Army in the World War II, and he worked as a medic, and he worked with dealing with morphine used as a painkiller, and he saw how people were getting addicted to it. And that's why his most famous book, The Man with the Golden Arm, deals with morphine addiction, which was very common among vets after World War II.
That is his most famous book, and I guess he won several awards, including the National Book Award.
It was the first National Book Award for fiction, and it was the first book of fiction that dealt with drug addiction in the United States. So it was a real groundbreaker.
And let's go back in time. At that point, you didn't talk about certain things, did
you? No,
right?
you didn't. And so it was really kind of radical for him to talk about this. And I think that that's part of his star really rose in the 1940s. There, you know, people were looking to make movies out of his books and everything. And then it fell in the 50s because people didn't want to hear about that. They didn't want to hear about the underside of American life anymore. They wanted everything to be rosy. It was Eisenhower's America. And at that point, Algren was seen as kind of a has-been, and his star kind of fell. And it didn't come back until later. And I think it's back now because I think we realize a lot of the lessons he was teaching are still relevant.
Do you really think it is back? I mean, my impression is that, yes, there are very literate people like yourself who are well aware of who he is. But the general population who's 25, mm-hmm. I wouldn't think they would know. But I could be wrong.
I run into people who are young people who are into Algren. When I was covering protests at Reuters, I ran into a kid with a backpack who said, "You know, I really wanted to come to Chicago because I heard about this book about a gambler, and I'm a gambler." And he had The Man with the Golden Arm in his backpack. So,
wow. Did he have Nelson Algren, not the person you ran into? Did he have a problem with addiction of gambling? I
mean. With gambling, well, he had a problem in that he wasn't very good at it. And one of his friends said that whenever he had a good hand in poker, his eyes would light up like headlamps, and so he would lose lots of money. When he was married the second time, he lost part of his wife's salary, his own salary when he was a teacher out at the University of Iowa on poker, because he just wasn't. People thought of him as like this tough guy, but he really wasn't good at some of those tough guy things. He also used to bet on boxing, which he was very into, and he would always pick the wrong guy.
Always. Simone de Beauvoir. Did I pronounce that right?
De Beauvoir. De Beauvoir.
De Beauvoir.
Yes.
It even sounds as French as it is.
Yes.
Who was she?
She was a French philosopher, and she was the writer of The Second Sex, which was like the premier book about feminism, the kind of one of the things that started the feminist movement. And she was the partner of Jean-Paul Sartre. And she came to the United States to, find out what the United States was like in 1947. And when she was in Chicago, she got to meet Nelson Algren, and they became lovers.
Yeah. But then they weren't.
They were lovers for a while. They took a long trip together. They took a riverboat down the Mississippi, and then they traveled in Mexico and Guatemala. And they were big influences on each other. She read the first drafts of The Man with the Golden Arm, helped him pick a title for it. And he helped her with The Second Sex. He was initially just going to write an essay about women's rights, and he helped encourage her to make it into a book. And so they were big influences on their most prominent books. And eventually what happened was that they just couldn't – it's hard to have a long-distance relationship. He was connected so intimately with Chicago, and she was connected to Paris. And they would visit each other, but in the end it just didn't work out.
Well, yeah, and there was no internet back then, and – even making an international phone call was a big deal.
Right. Well, the other problem was that even after they'd broken up as lovers, they were still friends. But then he couldn't get to Paris because he was denied a passport because he was suspected of having been a communist. And that was in the early 50s. And that was a problem for a lot of writers and artists at that time.
Indeed. And you write about that, too, in your book, Algren, A Life. All right, now people are listening, and they're saying, this guy sounds interesting. Which book would I choose?
I would choose, for a start, a book he wrote in 1951 called Chicago, City on the Make. And this is a very short book. It's about 90 pages, and it's not a novel. It's kind of a prose poem. But if you've heard about Algren at all, you've probably heard a lot of the phrases from this book. It's an ode to a place that divides the heart, leaving you loving the joint for keeps, yet knowing it can never love you. And you might have heard that loving Chicago is like loving a woman with a broken nose. You may well find lovelier lovelies, but never a lovely so real. This book, and it's got the most beautiful poetry about Chicago in it and the history of Chicago in it. It talks about the Black Sox. It talks about the various corruption scandals we've had. And, it's only 90 pages. You can read it in 2 hours. I think that everyone should get it with their first water bill. Or their first traffic ticket, to make you into a Chicagoan. This is the book to get. Chicago, City on the Make. So try that one.
They're doing something else with traffic bills, by the way. I just found this out. Parking tickets, even if you don't – so if you don't plug a meter, the so-called meters now, right? So if you don't put money in it, on certain streets throughout half the city, on major streets there are cameras, and they see that you don't. So even though you're not getting a ticket by a human being, that camera sees that somehow they see that your car is there and you did not put money in. That's got to be a news story soon.
Well, they're watching you. Yeah, I used to cover transportation, so that would be a real interest for me. My advice for people in Chicago is please take public transit if you can, because they're gonna get you if you bring a car downtown.
Yeah, downtown especially. All right, so this unique human being and Nelson Algren and Art Shea. I mentioned him. Art Shea was a photographer. And in fact, I will tell you, maybe I will impress Mary Wisniewski. I interviewed him, and I still have a photograph he took of me as I was interviewing him.
Oh, how fun, because he was such a gifted photographer.
Explain again, book after book after book, photography book, a name that might have been lost to some, not you, but lost to some in history.
Yeah, Art Shea was a photographer who worked for Time magazine. He captured the civil rights movement. He was an amazing photographer, and he worked with Algren. They became friends. They became buddies. They would travel the city together. And Shea really knew how to – he wanted to capture the lower depths in photographs the way Algren did it in words. And Algren was a great topic for him, because Algren never looked at the camera. It was like he was just kind of a ghost in the photographs of these, and he would take pictures of prostitutes and bums on the street and guys without legs walking around in wheeled carts, and just the kind of things that were on what was then Skid Row on Madison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they would capture that life, and they're beautiful pictures.
If Algren were around today, what would he say about Chicago?
He would probably say some of the same things he says in City on the Make, that there's a contest in Chicago and in the United States in general between the people who are trying to grift, who are trying to make a buck off poor people, and those who are trying to be helpers. And that he used to say that the grifters are always, they get four strikes to an at-bat, and the do-gooders only get two strikes to an at-bat. But the do-gooders do manage to make their point in the end. You know, the Jane Addams of the world, manage to do some good. He would see those same patterns repeating themselves in Chicago and in the United States in general.
The name of the book again, Algren, A Life. Mary Wisniewski. I know, before we run out of time, I meant to ask you, you have a birthday celebration coming up, and it's not yours.
No, it's Nelson Algren's.
Of course.
March 28th, but the birthday party that's being given by the Algren Committee is March 29th. We don't have a location yet, but we're going to be making announcements of it. If you look up the Algren Committee on Google, you can find it, or my website, marywishchicago.com. If you want to read the book, it's in the library, it's on Amazon, but you can also get the audiobook version, which I perform with the great Chicago actor Gary Houston doing Algren's parts.
Which is amazing. What a great actor. What a great actor.
Oh,
he has that voice. I know.
Oh, yeah. He's got the voice.
I remember that. Yeah. What is your website again?
It's Mary Wiz.
Spell that?
Mary, W-I-Z.
Got it.
Chicago.com.
Got it as well. Mary Wiz, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much, Steve.